Okay, we're live, everyone. Just let everybody know we're live. And hello, everyone. This is Dr. Roger Paul. Tonight, we're going to continue our study on paper 134, and we're in section 5. It's called Political Sovereignty. And that starts on page 1487 of the original book, 1487.8. And it's paper 134, section 5, paragraph 1, and the rest of it. So let's change the slide here, and we will get started. Political sovereignty. Now, we read this last time at the end, but we didn't talk about it. So let's reread it again, and then we'll talk about it from there. Pam, I'm going to start on the bottom here tonight. Would you mind taking this one first? No, Pam, let me slip on.
Political sovereignty. While the Master's teaching concerning the sovereignty of God is truth only complicated by the subsequent appearance of the religion about him among the world's religions, his presentations concerning political sovereignty are vastly complicated by the political evolution of nation life during the last 1900 years and more. In the times of Jesus, there were only two great world powers, the Roman Empire in the West and the Han Empire in the East. And these were widely separated by the Parthian kingdom and other intervening lands of the Caspian and Turkestan regions. We have therefore, in the following presentation, departed more widely from the substance of the Master's teachings at Urmia concerning political sovereignty, at the same time attempting to depict the import of such teachings as they are applicable to the peculiarly critical stage of the evolution of political sovereignty in the 20th century after Christ.
Okay, and we're going to be off in reading order a little bit just to start out a little bit, because I wanted to get that out there by letting Pam read it. Y'all, I have to excuse me. I have a migraine headache tonight for some reason. My electrolytes are off, I think. But anyway, we're going to go on with this and see if I can't make some sense of it. First of all, you have to remember that the political situation in Rome back in that period of time, there were two great powers, the Roman Empire and the Han Empire. The Han Empire was basically the Asiatic states. You know, that included China and Japan and all the islands and that sort of thing. So that was under the Han rule during that period of time, a large part of the world. And then, of course, Rome controlled everything else. And the point about this whole section in papers, really very applicable to today, because what they've done, they've reworded Jesus's words to kind of fit into our political society as it is today. And the problem is this: in our political society, we don't take seriously enough our trust that the human race puts in our political figures to stay honest and represent us according to what should be done. The problem is this: our political society, all of it, is corrupted by money. And you're going to say, well, all of it? And I said, yeah, absolutely all of it at this point. And there's a lot of people in government that are trying to straighten this out. That's part of what the Doge thing was, is try to straighten out the overspending of taxes on things that are not important and things that the human race did not approve in any shape, form, or fashion. And the problem always comes back to those who are in control. There's a misuse of trust. We trust the politicians when we elect them to go out and do what we have elected them to do. And what happens as soon as they get into the Congress or the House, they start getting kickbacks, all right, from special interest groups. And also, they get kickbacks from people they give contracts to and that sort of thing. So, a good portion of the money in government gives to goes to non-necessary things and services because of this situation of the kickbacks to the politicians. Instead of straightening it out, they're rewarded for keeping it so that they get this money and the politicians get this money and they spend it's a misuse of funds that the whole United States is putting into it. And this is the same problem in other countries also. All right. Does that make sense? Everybody still with me?
Yeah.
Haven't insulted anybody yet? The night's young yet, so I'll try a little bit harder. Okay, let's start from here. And I am not going to read tonight because I can't really focus, to be honest, y'all. So I'm going to let Diane take the next one.
Okay. Yeah, go. War on your rancho will never end so long as nations cling to the elusive notions of unlimited na national sovereignty. There are only two levels of relative sovereignty on an inhabited world: the spiritual free will of the individual mortal and the collective sovereignty of mankind as a whole. Between the level of the individual human being and the level of the total of mankind, all groupings and associations are relative, transitory, and of value only insofar as they enhance the welfare, well-being, and progress of the individual and the planetary grand total, man and mankind.
I'm mute. Did y'all catch that? That as long as we cling to this national concept that we're exclusive in the world, not a world concept, as long as we cling to this, there'll always be national conflicts between one nation and another. And part of that problem, that relative sovereignty, we think that we're sovereign to the point where we run the world, and in reality, we do not run the world. The Most Highs in the Relashedik run the world. They are in charge of men. We are just temporary custodians of the political situation on the planet. And that goes for every single nation. So, as long as we keep thinking that we're better as a nation than all other nations, then we're going to always have these national conflicts and we're going to always have wars. That's what it's saying here. Okay, so until we come to that concept of unity of the whole world and that we're all part of the cosmic citizenship of the universe, then we're always going to have a problem like this. Okay. And this goes back to what I was just talking about in the last paragraph of our representatives that we send to our government that are supposed to represent us who don't. That's a real problem. Okay, and here's a picture of a representative of a thing. You can look at that later. All right, Rodney, would you take the next one, please?
Religious teachers must always remember that the spiritual sovereignty of God overrides all intervening and intermediate spiritual loyalties. Someday, civil rulers will learn that the Most Highs rule in the kingdoms of men.
Okay, until we come to that realization, we're going to always have that problem, aren't we? We're just right now representative of the planet for all the worlds, in not realizing that the sovereignty of the world has nothing to do with us. It has to do with the spiritual world in itself controlling the sovereignty of everything. All right, Letch, would you take the next one?
Okay. This rule of the Most Highs in the kingdoms of men is not for the especial benefit of any especially favored group of mortals. There is no such thing as a chosen people. The rule of the Most Highs, the over-controllers of political evolution, is a rule designed to foster the greatest good to the greatest number of all men and for the greatest length of time.
There it is. There is no chosen people, is there? And this comes back to the conflict between the angels of the churches and the angels of progress when they tried to put this statement down for us to read. You know, even the angelic corps has problems with things like this. All right. Pam, would you go again so we keep them in order here?
Sovereignty is power, and it grows by organization. This growth of the organization of political power is good and proper, for it tends to encompass ever-widening segments of the total of mankind. But this same growth of political organizations creates a problem at every intervening stage between the initial and natural organization of political power, the family, and the final consumption of political
consummation. Consummation, Pam. Yeah.
Consummation of political growth, the government of all mankind, by all mankind, and for all mankind.
In other words, all the governments have an equal say in the government of the world, right? Not just a single government. All right. Gary, would you take the next one, please?
Starting out with parental power in the family group, political sovereignty evolves by organization as families overlap into consanguineous clans, which become united for various reasons into tribal units. Super consanguineous political groupings, and then by trade, commerce, and conquest, tribes become unified as a nation, while nations themselves sometimes become unified by empire.
And then eventually all the empires come into together as a world power. And that's what will eventually happen on this planet, whether we like it or not, right? All right, Jane, would you take the next one, please?
As sovereignty passes from smaller groups to larger groups, wars are lessened. That is, minor wars between smaller nations are lessened. But the potential for greater wars is increased as the nations wielding sovereignty become larger and larger. Presently, when all the world has been explored and occupied, when nations are few, strong, and powerful, when these great and supposedly sovereign nations come to touch borders, when only oceans separate them, then will the stage be set for major wars, worldwide conflicts. So-called sovereign nations cannot rub elbows without generating conflict and eventuating wars.
And that's the situation we have right now, right? Yeah. We got superpowers all rubbing elbows together, and all of them want to rule. Right? Every single one of them. Instead of looking at a worldview, they want to go on with this national view, and they each nation feels like it should run the world, basically. All right. Diane, do you take
a difficulty in the evolution of political sovereignty from the family to all mankind lies in the inertia resistance. Resistance exhibited on all intervening levels. Families have on occasion defied their clan, while clans and tribes have often been subversive of the sovereignty of the territorial state. Each new and forward evolution of political sovereignty is and has always been embraced and hampered by the scaffolding stages of the previous developments in the political organization. And this is true because human loyalties, once mobilized, are hard to change. The same loyalty which makes possible the evolution of the tribe makes difficult the evolution of the super tribe, the territorial state. And the same loyalty patriotism, which makes possible the evolution of the territorial state, vastly complicates the evolutionary development of the government of all mankind.
Roger, you're muted.
Sorry about that, y'all. We like to think of ourselves as patriots. I think of myself as a patriot all the time. But in reality, that slows down the progress of this concept that we're all part of a cosmic government. You know, it's kind of hard for us to understand the angels and things and the midwayers that helped write this are all part of celestial government. They don't think anything about the different territories of the worlds and all that thing. They think of our world as just one unit, okay? And they think of that one unit as part of billions of units and planets that are all part of a celestial government. They don't make any big deal about any one of them. So it's hard for them to kind of relay to us the fact that the way they look at things is we're all part of a celestial government, and we think of ourselves as part of a country government, not even a world government, but a country government. All right. So let's go on. Rodney, would you take the next one, please?
Yes. Political sovereignty is created out of the surrender of self-determinism. Determinism. First by the individual within the family, and then by the families and clans in relation to the tribe and larger groupings. This progressive transfer of self-determination from the smaller to ever larger political organizations has generally proceeded unabated in the East since the establishment of the Ming and the Mogul dynasty,
Mogul dynasty. Yeah.
dynasties. In the West, it obtained for more than 1,000 years, right on down to the end of the World War, when an unfortunate retrograde movement temporarily reversed this normal trend by reestablishing the submerged political sovereignty of numerous small groups in Europe.
So up to the point of World War I, really, we were progressing in towards more of a world concept government. But that stopped in World War I and World War II because of Germany trying to take over the world, didn't it? So after World War II, we stepped in and kind of straightened out the conflict. But then we had major powers come up like Russia and China, who wanted to dominate the political sovereignty of the world, and so did the United States and several of the countries in Europe. So we have repolarized ourselves into a more concise governments in each and every country, and that's where we all are today still. Now, I'm not suggesting by any stretch of the imagination. I don't want to get email that I'm a communist or something like that. That's exactly opposite of what I am. Okay. I believe that nations have the right to their sovereignty as a nation, but we also have a right as a nation, as a sovereign nation, to be part of a larger picture world sovereignty in which all these nations can all be equal parts in a national in say in the world concepts of government itself. But each we can have, just like we have each and every state in the United States has a certain amount of state sovereignty, doesn't it? Okay, so we have our own laws. And that can be the same thing with the countries in the world. Each have our own laws and concepts of our, society and that sort of thing, but still be part of a world government that is out for the best and the good of the whole planet. And that's what they're talking about here. They're not talking about giving up your sovereignty as a nation. They're talking about making a step up from being just yourself in a bubble, but you have to take in the concept of the whole world. An example of that is this. If there were worlds, were some kind of world conflict, you can bet your bippy that all the nations would come together against whatever threat there is outside the world. Now, that's not going to happen because all these planets outside our world are part of what? Salvington. They're part of Nebadon. And more than likely not, a lot of these worlds are a lot more advanced than we are. So they're not going to be going out and trying to conquer other worlds because they will see that there's no benefit in doing that. Okay, so that's what we're talking about. But that's just an example that if we did have a conflict worldwide, then all of our nations would come together in the same concepts and support the entire world. That's the whole point. Reagan made that point many years ago, right?
Roger,
Yeah.
this is paraphrased from what Jesus taught.
This is paraphrased from what Jesus taught. Yeah.
Well, he didn't, that was no world war back then.
No, but there was conflicts between nations that you had the nation, if you would, the Jews against the Roman nation. Okay.
And the
In
meaning against Romans.
right. Excuse me. Excuse me again. You also had the Han dynasty against Rome also, because Rome kept trying to expand out, but they kept running into what? The Han dynasty, which was in essence as powerful as Rome was in the Asian worlds. Okay. All right, so
You
I
gotta.
think you need to mute. You gotta
Who we
let's.
got? Who?
That's a little better.
Oh, okay. All right. So who's next? I think Letch is next.
Letch?
Letch?
Oh, my turn?
Yeah.
Okay. Urantia will not enjoy lasting peace until the so-called sovereign nations intelligently and fully surrender their sovereign powers into the hands of the Brotherhood of Men, mankind government. Internationalism, leagues of nations, can never bring permanent peace to mankind. Worldwide confederations of nations will effectively prevent minor wars and acceptably control the smaller nations. But they will not prevent world wars, nor control the three, four, or five most powerful governments. In the face of real conflicts, one of these world powers will withdraw from the league and declare war. You cannot prevent nations going to war as long as they remain infected with the delusional virus of national sovereignty. Internationalism is a step in the right direction. An international police force will prevent many minor wars, but it will not be effective in preventing major wars, conflicts between the great military governments of Earth.
And why would that be? Because they're not powerful enough, are they? A League of Nations can have an army or whatever, but they are never strong enough to overcome a national country like we have, like the United States or Russia or China, because we're just too powerful, right? We have to voluntarily give up that control to a league in which all the nations have equal power, right? Which is very hard to do. Pam, would you take the next one?
As the number of truly sovereign nations, great powers, decreases, so do both opportunity and need for mankind government increase. when there are only a few really sovereign great powers, either they must embark on the life and death struggle for national imperial supremacy, or else, by voluntary surrender of certain prerogatives of sovereignty, they must create the essential nucleus of supranational power, which will serve as the beginning of the real sovereignty of all mankind.
Now, y'all think about this. If Jesus appeared tomorrow on a mountaintop, whatever, and we all saw him, all the nations would automatically want to do what? Give the sovereignty of the world over to Jesus, wouldn't they? Because they know that Jesus, what they will eventually know that Jesus is the creator and ruler of all of our universe. Now, in essence, that is already the case. Jesus is the creator and ruler of our universe, and he is by default our planetary prince, in which he has assigned Melchizedek as our planetary prince in lieu of him, right? So if Machaventia decided to, as a planetary prince, he could make himself visible and everything and tell him, listen, all this war is going to stop right now. And he has the power to do that, but he hasn't done so, probably because the Lucifer Rebellion has not been completely adjudicated. Okay? So that is a possibility into the future, but only something with that great a power would influence governments to the point of giving up their sovereign control of our country to something more powerful than itself. Okay? So that's what you would call a supreme power. All right, Gary, would you take the next one?
Peace will not come to your ranch until every so-called sovereign nation surrenders. We read that, didn't we?
No.
Okay, peace will not come to your ranch until every so-called sovereign nation surrenders its power to make war into the hands of a representative government of all mankind. Political sovereignty is innate with the peoples of the world. When all the peoples of your ranch create a world government, they have the right and the power to make such a government sovereign. And when such a representative or democratic world power controls the world's lands, air, and naval forces, peace on earth and goodwill among men can prevail, but not until then.
You notice here it says representative or democratic government, world power, right? What is the United States supposed to be?
Representative.
That's right. That's what we're supposed to have. That's the way, what our forefathers, when they developed the Constitution, was going for, is a representative or democratic world power, but not in the sense of political Democrats and Republicans and that sort of thing. They're talking about a republic, and that's exactly what the United States is. So we're on the right track as a country to create a government, a republic, a representative government. But until other nations, large nations like China and Russia and places like that, till they get that concept and do that themselves, we're always going to be in conflict with them. That's why the Urantia book is so against communism and socialism, okay? Because it's not what? Representative or a democratic government. And until those countries get that idea, they cannot become part of a League of Nations, and which rep allows representation for its people all over the world. And until that happens, we have no chance of getting into that category. All right. Does that make sense?
Yes,
Okay,
it
that's what.
doesn't to me, but can I tell you why and tell me where I'm wrong? I believe China and Russia both have elections.
They do, but it's not a representative government,
Well,
okay?
how's it different? I mean, if
Because
they
it's
elect.
communistic. In other words, they get representation so that they have a ruling class that controls the population. That's
if you're
not.
not part of the party, you're not part of the candidacy. Therefore, you're not capable
That's
of.
exactly right. If you're not part of the party, you're not part of the process. And when we talk about a representative government, that includes all people in the government, whether you're part of a party or not. Really, in reality, we should not have parties at all. We should only have elections of representatives to our government that are non-party associated.
Do you know Thomas Adams wrote a paper on this saying that we should not, the establishment of political parties will take away from the representatives' responsibility to the people and the government, and it'll be sidetracked to the loyalty to the party itself, and therefore be a stigma on the process.
And that's exactly right. That's what's happening today, right?
And he was a pretty smart man.
He's a pretty smart man, and that's exactly right. So eventually we will probably grow out of political parties, period, right? We will have a government of representation of those who are more qualified. Now, part of our problem right now, and I know I harp on politics sometimes, but part of our problem right now is we are electing people into representative positions that are non-qualified. Okay. I mean, non-qualified to the point of ridiculousness. Okay. So we elect judges, we elect the Congress, we elect the House of Representatives. We know nothing about these people. These people have not been trained in anything. So when they get to the Congress or they get to the House of Representatives, they have no concept of how to make laws. That's the basic thing they should have. Okay. Used to be only lawyers ran for office. Why? Because they knew how to make laws. Now that we got away from that, and so we elect people that have no concept of how to run a government, no concept of how to make laws or anything else. If you want to read how this should be done, read the paper on government of a neighboring planet. That is the way it should be done. All of the people that want to be elected should go through a training process of a couple of years, get certified that they understand government, they understand how to make laws, they understand how to represent people, they understand they can't steal money, that sort of thing. All these things should be covered before they ever have the possibility of being elected. Okay, and that's our main problem right now. We get stupid idiots trying to run our country because they're not trained in anything. Okay, and if you don't think that's the case, turn on your TV any night and you listen to some of these people that are talking on TV that are in the House or in the Congress, and some of them are complete idiots. Okay. And if you don't think so, just turn your TV on and listen to them for a few minutes, and you'll figure that out real quick. So you can't run a country sending a horse to Congress. You can't run the country sending a jackass to Congress. You can't run a country sending a donkey or a pig to Congress because they don't know what in the heck they're talking about. They're not human. And some of the people we send to Congress are just barely above that. You see what I'm saying? So that's the way I
Roger,
feel about it. Yeah.
in Charlotte, a couple of weeks back, something went on, I don't recall, with the government in Charlotte, and this was Sanctuary City, etc.
Yeah.
But anyway, they were interviewing this one political person or captain or something about what went on. And he came out with the statement, he says, "That's what you get when you elect children to office."
Yeah, it's true. That is what you get. All right.
I thought
That's
I'd
a
pass that along, so now you got it.
All right. Let's move on. Let's see. Did you just read, Gary?
Think so.
I think I did.
Okay, Jane, would you take the next one?
Do you use that? an important 19th and 20th century illustration. The 48 states of the American Federal Union have long enjoyed peace. They have no more wars among themselves. They have surrendered their sovereignty to the federal government, and through the arbitrament of war, they have abandoned all claims to the delusions of self-determination. While each state regulates its internal affairs, it is not concerned with foreign relations, tariffs, immigration, military affairs, or interstate commerce. Neither do the individual states concern themselves with the matters of citizenship. The 48 states suffered the ravages of war only when the federal government sovereignty is in some way jeopardized.
And that's exactly what happened in the Civil War, didn't it? Sovereignty of the United States was challenged by some of the states, and that's how we ended up in war. All right. Excuse me. Diane.
These 48 states, having abandoned the twin sophistries sovereignty, gotta read this one, and self-determination, enjoy interstate peace and tranquility. So will the nations of Urantia begin to enjoy peace when they freely surrender their respective sovereignties into the hands of a global government, the sovereignty of the Brotherhood of Men. In this world state, small nations will be as powerful as the great, even as a small state of Rhode Island has its two senators in the American Congress, just the same as the populous state of New York or the large state of Texas.
So there must be, yeah.
This is not paraphrased from Jesus's teaching.
No, no, this is an example.
Yeah, okay.
Rodney,
they
just, yeah, the midwayers use this as an example for our understanding. You know, there's no way they could have known 2,000 years ago that we were going to have, you know,
it's Texas,
50 some states. You know, I mean, it's just, or that they didn't know there would be a Rhode Island or a Texas, right? So, all right, let's see here. Rodney, would you take the next one?
Yes. The limited state sovereignty of these 48 states was created by men and for men. The super state national sovereignty of the American Federal Union was created by the original 13 of these states for their own benefit and for the benefit of men. Sometime the supranational sovereignty of the planetary government of mankind will be similarly created by nations for their own benefit and for the benefit of all men.
I need to mention something here, y'all, because facts are facts, right? The 13, we started out with 13 states, right?
Colonies.
Colonies, right, which turned into states. If what happened in America should have been proper, we should have had 100 and something other states in the lands of America of the American tribes, shouldn't we?
True.
I mean, instead, we invaded all the Indian lands. We took away their lands. We took away their culture. You know, in essence, we should have made each and every one of them a separate state. That's what should have happened. So if that would have happened back then we would have had 132 or something. I forget exactly how many tribes there were on my
But they're reservations.
They're reservations now. They're separate, considered separate nations.
Federal.
Really, yeah, but there's not that many of them anymore because we wiped out the rest of them, didn't we?
Correct.
So
killed them off.
killed them off one tribe at a time, and then the ones that wouldn't move, we forcibly moved, right? All right, so I
Well, the
just want
Trail
to.
of Tears and the North Carolina Cherokee Indians.
That's exactly right, and so if you think back on it, we have not always done what literally was the best and true thing to do, have we?
Correct.
Nope.
I mean, it's just like if you think about it, and this is a strange comparison, but if you think about it, it's the exact same thing that Germany was trying to do through the rest of Europe, wasn't it?
It's true.
We have, United States does not have the moral authority to look down upon anybody else because we genocide the Indians just the same as the Germans
Genocide the
genocide
Jews.
the Jews.
That's ex
And
that's exactly
that
right.
those are just two examples in the world. And we could, if I was more worldly, I could probably go on and on and on because
Well,
I think England's also guilty, and I think about every substantial country in the world has some type of that history.
Genghis Khan, right? He just about conquered the whole world. He did the same thing, didn't he? Wiped out whole nations, wiped out tribes, wiped out whole peoples. So, you know, we've not had a very good history of loving one another and helping each other in mankind, have we? So I just wanted to bring up that point. So we have nothing to boast about. Okay.
I'd like to make a point.
Yeah.
And we often talk about world government, which this is, but there's only one thing. For a true world government to be beneficial to all mankind, man has to come into the realization and follow the dictates of Jesus and saying, love thy neighbor as thyself. And until that happens, the powerful will always exploit.
Well, it boils down to his primary message, the fatherhood of God and the brotherhood of man, right? If you follow the brotherhood of man, then things should turn out a lot different. Okay, and that's just the way it is. Okay, Letch, would you take the next one? Letch, you awake?
Yes.
You're next.
My turn?
Yes, your turn.
Citizens are not born for the benefit of governments. Governments are organizations created and devised for the benefit of men. There can be no end to the evolution of political sovereignty short of the appearance of the government of the sovereignty of all men. All other sovereignties are relative in value, intermediate in meaning, and subordinate in status.
Okay, so until we get to the point where we have a sovereignty of all man, which is run by whom? Machiavelli and Melchizedek, isn't it? Until we come under that sovereignty, the rest of it are just stepping stones of evolution, okay? And that's the way it is, unfortunately. Or fortunately, whichever way you want to look at it. Pam, would you
You
take
know,
the.
that what Les just read should be copied and sent to every representative in the country.
The trouble is with that, Gary, is
They
what?
can't read.
They can't read half of them and the other half won't read it, right? That's sad to say, but it's true. All right, Pam, would you take the next one?
With scientific progress, wars are going to become more and more devastating until they become almost racially suicidal. How many world wars must be fought, and how many leagues of nations must fail before men will be willing to establish the government of mankind and begin to enjoy the blessings of permanent peace and thrive on the tranquility of goodwill, worldwide goodwill among men?
And what has to be given up for that? Self-aggrandization, right? In other words, we have to replace thinking that we want to own everything, we want to run everything, we want to be the richest man in the world and all this stuff. We have to give up those notions, don't we, to become a one-world government. All right. Gary, would you take the next one? Law, liberty, and sovereignty.
Six, as he said, if one man craves freedom, liberty, he must remember that all other men long for the same freedom. Groups of such liberty-loving mortals cannot live together in peace without becoming subservient to the such laws, rules, and regulations as will grant each person the same degree of freedom, which at the same time safeguarding an equal degree of freedom for all of his fellow mortals. If one man is to be absolute free, then another must become an absolute slave. And the relative nature of freedom is true socially, economically, and politically. Freedom is the gift of civilization made possible by the enforcement of law, capital letters.
Now, why is that, y'all? Y'all tell me, y'all know this. Why must you have enforcement of law to have liberty?
Because the same as a schoolyard bully.
That's
The
exactly
biggest
right.
guy in the thing is usually going to rule the rule unless three or four of the smaller guys says, no, you're not.
That's exactly right. Control should not be given to those who are bullies or lord over other beings, right, or other people. Okay, so we all should be treated equally. Jane, would you take the next one?
Religion makes it spiritually possible to realize the brotherhood of man, but it will require mankind government to regulate the social, economic, and political problems associated with such a goal of human happiness and efficiency.
Okay, so all these things must come together, and we must have the rule of law to make it equal for everyone to have the opportunities to have social, economic, and political freedom in their lifetimes, right? That's why we have to have police forces. That's why we have to have basically military to shut down those who want to overlord us. All right, Diane, would you take the next one, please, dear?
There shall be wars and rumors of wars. Nations will rise against nation. Just as long as the world's political sovereignty is divided up and unjustly held by a group of nation states. England, Scotland, and Wales were always fighting each other until they gave up their respective sovereignties, reposing them in the United Kingdom.
Thank you, I'm muted, but it's my turn. Another world war will teach the so-called sovereign nations to form some sort of federation, thus creating the machinery for preventing small wars, wars between the lesser nations. But global wars will go on until the government of mankind is created. Global sovereignty will prevent global wars. Nothing else can.
Well, so far, what we've have the United Nations, which is not doing a very good job of keeping the small wars down at all.
That's right.
Roger, you're muted.
You're muted, Roger.
That's right. They're not doing their job at all, are they? So the no. United Nations is a waste of time.
It's not set up right.
It's not set up properly. Each nation should have an equal say, and then you should have a military to back up all those things in which they don't, and we don't, right? Look how they've handled the conflict between Russia and the Ukraine, right? They don't even want to put their money into the military stopping of Russia stepping on Ukraine, do they? I mean, that's just the way it is. Let me give you all a scary, scary thought. We're in the age of AI, are we not?
Yes.
What if AI expands to the point over the next 20 years that it literally takes over the political sovereignty of all nations?
That's been done in a movie, I think.
Yeah, probably has. So that is definitely a possibility. And that's why everybody's so scared about things. They're afraid of AI taking over. But if AI does take over and takes over the world, we'll be literally in a communistic society controlled by a machine. Right? And that's not good either. So unless we learn how to control AI at this point in state in our evolution, we may be heading for a revolution that must happen against the technology in which we have created, right, over time. That's a scary thought just in itself. But if the AI controls all the military, all the technology and everything else, it could literally control the world if it's not put under the association and control of the morals of spiritual men.
Roger.
Yeah.
Can AI ever have moral values?
It can be taught moral values, yeah. It could be programmed. AI is just programming, okay?
Right.
So it can be programmed moral values. I'll take you one step further. AI can be taught everything in the Urantia book in such a short period of time, it's unbelievable, okay? It can also regurgitate the concepts of the Urantia book on multiple levels of response. Now, what am I saying? In other words, you can tell it to take the concepts of paper number one of the Urantia book, and I want you to break it down for a third grader. And it does a very good job of breaking the concepts down for a third grader. Okay, you can break it down for a fifth grader. You can break it down for a college person. You can break it down for someone who's got multiple degrees, and it will return information that's correct from the Urantia book for these different levels. All right, you with me so far?
Yes.
So with that, you can also take the moral lessons and values from the Urantia book and program it into the AI consciousness. And if you say this is the basis for all humanity and the rules for you, not only humanity, but the rules for which you should do things, okay? Right. So you could teach it morals just from the Urantia book if you chose to.
So we could do that ourselves.
We can do that ourselves.
Thank you. You've been doing that, Roger.
I've been doing that. I've been doing that over and over again. Let me give you an example. Which each lesson I taught on the life of Jesus, I started using the AI to pull the quotes I want for. I asked for 30 quotes from my lesson from the Urantia book and from what I've taught on that particular lesson. So I can put the quotes on a video that people can watch. And these are where the inspirational quotes come from. Okay. So all it's doing is taking my words and my concepts and giving me 30 concepts with three-part quotes. Okay. And y'all have seen these coming out, right? That's a perfect use for AI. Now I have to go back and tweak it and, you know, every single quote and make sure that it's correct and that because it's not perfect. But that's because the AI is not perfect, right? It's a machine, so you have to go back and check everything. But still, the fact that it can do that helps me in the work I'm doing for God, even though I'm using AI. You see what I'm saying?
I understand.
Okay, so it's all in how you use technology. If you realize this is just a stupid machine, that's all it boils down to, but it's able to take what I say, what the book says, and that sort of pull facts out for me, and I can organize it in any way I choose to do it. And I've done it a bunch of different ways, but it helps get that information out to people on a level in which they can understand. Because when I do it for the quotes, I ask it for the 30 quotes on the level that a seventh grader can understand.
Cool.
Okay. So, and that's kind of a mid-range of what people learn through their life. So if you, if a seventh grader can understand it, most people should be able to understand the quotes. Now, I get responses from people all the time how wonderful the quotes are. Okay. But it's straight from the book. It's straight from my teaching, the lessons on Jesus. There's nothing in there that's not something I've said at one time or another. Right.
What happens, Roger, when the book, when the AI understands the book better than you say, and you disagree with AI?
You type it in and tell it you disagree with it and correct it.
Well, what if it says, no, you're wrong?
It doesn't do that because it knows it's not. It takes the information that's been programmed into it. And if you tell it this is not appropriate or this is not right, it will rewrite it in such a way that it will be. And I've done that over and over again, you know, corrected it. But once you correct it, it should have the memory to know that it's been corrected. So the concept it had was wrong. So it's been corrected in the right concept. You see what I'm saying?
Roger, I have a question. So, yeah. How did you download the Urantia book to AI?
I didn't download. It's already been downloaded several times by several people in the Urantia Society. I've talked to them about it. Yeah. But I didn't have to download the book to AI because the book is already out there in multiple formats, not only on our website, but on other websites. The entire book is already out there. So if you ask it to research something in the Urantia book, it will go to those sites and pull it right out of the book.
I see.
Yeah. Great. Which is pretty nice if you want to know something.
Yeah.
You know? It's all in how you use it, but you have to realize the AI is not a person. It's a machine. It's been programmed by persons, but it doesn't have the moral values of people. It only has the information that's been programmed into it. So you can't ask it to make a moral value for you. You have to make the moral values yourself.
Aren't they trying to program into AI morals?
Yeah, that's the problem right now. If we don't get it under control and program human moral values into it, it could take over things. That's the problem. Okay, that's the big issue right now. And all those who are developing AIs, realize that. Now, did we finish this paragraph? Because I think the next paragraph is a different section. Law and liberty.
I think it's the next one. I think it says it's another world war will teach us so-called sovereign nations.
You read this. Okay, yeah. So we're going to stop on that one because the next one is a new section. I believe. Where am I at?
Nope.
No, I hit it by accident. Law alert. Okay, that's where we'll. No, that's not.
We started.
Okay, I'll figure it out, and we'll start at the right place next time, because we're out of time as usual. I hope y'all benefited. Does this stuff help going through this stuff like this?
It's good philosophy. Yeah.
Huh?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Because I don't want to get off on things that's not, you know, not helping us all. Let me stop the share here. Oh, hang on. Stop share and reshare the prayer of acceptance. Oops. Reshared the same one. stuck in a loop here, y'all. Here we go. I should bring it up. Yeah, I brought it up. Okay, Diane, would you like to read our prayer of acceptance tonight? Here.
Prayer of acceptance. I believe that God is my paradise Father, and that only by faith am I saved. No sacrifice is necessary. By the same faith, I became a child of God, and know that all men and women are my brothers and sisters. We know the Son of God, the Sovereign of our universe of Nebadon, as Christ Michael, Jesus of Nazareth. By allowing the will of God to become my will, I will someday stand in the presence of the Paradise Father. In the name of Christ Michael, Jesus of Nazareth. Amen.
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 Oh, there we go. Thank you for coming and seeing us, everyone. And join us next time. And we may finish up this paper on the next one, I think. Because we still have to go through Mount Hermon. That's an interesting part. That's a pretty long part, too. It's a very important part of this book is Mount Hermon. So we'll go through that one next time. And till next time, thank you for coming. Hope you enjoyed it a little bit.
Thank you, Roger.
You're thank welcome, you, Roger. Guys. Love you guys.
Love everyone.
I'll see everybody
tonight.
Tuesday. Tonight. Right? All right.
Peace.
Love bye, everybody. You.